On today's Compassion Radio.
It appears that Beijing is saying we've had enough. This type of behavior, rhetoric, is a threat to our national security. We have to stop it. There's no question that they can shut down these demonstrations.
Welcome back, friends, to Compassion Radio, where we take a hard look at the world as it really is, from the perspective of the kingdom as it really is. While we've been preoccupied with a renewed struggle for justice and hope in our own country, Hong Kong is in a fight for its very life. While there are many parallels to our challenges here, there should be no mistaking the severity of the threat to a people committed to freedom of thought and opportunity. Even more importantly, Hong Kong has long been a gateway for the gospel into the Far East. For those committed to following Jesus Christ, it might seem like a no-brainer that we should stand with Hong Kong. As they say, however, history is a little messier than we'd like, and we have to reckon with that. What's in store for a staunch Western ally at the belly of China? How will the kingdom of God be affected? And what difference does it really make to us here at home? We'll dig into all those questions starting today. Thanks for joining us. Friends, back with us today, and I think it's an important time for us to discuss this next question, is our friend Dr. China. Dr. China, welcome back to Compassion Radio.
Thank you. It's a joy to be with you.
We have given you a euphemism for an important reason. You spend a lot of time and a lot of effort helping, on the diplomatic level, people of the West, many of which are of faith, find a way to negotiate the labyrinth of legislation and rules and all kinds of things about doing work in China, but more importantly, for people of faith and conscience that want to do work in East Asia, you can't avoid the big mothership, which is China. You help them do that work and do it in an ethical manner. So I just want to again shout out to my people on Compassion Radio that this is the reason why we talk to you. You have a redemptive worldview at the very core of what you do, and you've been an asset to us as we've traveled to do the work we've done with the churches of China. So thank you for being that kind of person. Thank you again for all you do.
Thank you. We try to do a very narrow, niched space, but do it with excellence.
And you have, as I've discovered, been a little landlocked recently. You are used to going back and forth over the ocean many times per year because you have many clients that need your expertise. And suddenly, we can't do that anymore. And so you sit around home waiting for people like me to call you on the telephone.
You are absolutely right. We book tickets, cancel them. Book more tickets and cancel them. Like everyone else, we are waiting to see how this most unusual situation resolves itself.
I understand your wife used to travel with you quite a bit, and during this time of waiting, decided it was time for you to expand your family. So tell me about that real quick.
Yeah, she did, Bram. She went and got herself a puppy.
A puppy. Well, that's a big commitment.
I will give you an update when I know more.
Fair enough, man. No carpet is safe at this point. You may have a whole new adventure in home redecorating coming ahead of you.
I understand that you had a tragedy at your house just recently.
Well, when you say goodbye to a dog that's been with you for a number of years, it's a heartbreak. I know most people know that experience who have ever had a dog. We always had rescue puppies in our family. So this last one was a beautiful bird dog with an incredible disposition, and it was just her time. You and I had scheduled the interview, and it turned out to be right on top of the time that we needed to say goodbye to Oki, our Brittany Spaniel. And so we did that, and you were kind enough to regroup and sit with me today for our interview. That is the context we're sitting in. Life gone, life beginning, life interrupted. All of us have some story right now, I think, of the things we were not expecting become the things that were the only things in our 2020.
Absolutely. I think if we could ask the listeners, they would all have their COVID story.
And that COVID story is informing a lot of what's happening right now, which seems to be, I think the expectation might be from the Chinese government that we wouldn't notice. But some big, big news happened this past week, and it's something that you and I speculated on a few months ago. China is making their big move on Hong Kong. So if you could explain to me really quickly what they're trying to do right now and what the immediate fallout is going to be. Let's talk about that, and then we'll go back and talk about the roots of this, why it's all happening.
I think that's an excellent approach for those that are joining us here to understand the history as well as what's happening. So let's try to break it down and make it just as simple as possible. In 1997, Hong Kong was handed over to the Chinese government by the British, and we can explore that backstory in a moment. When When they did, there was an agreement that there would be one country, two systems for a 50-year span.
At least, yeah.
So that was the understanding. As recently as the last 2 days, some attorney types in Beijing are saying, well, it never was voted on here in our country to make it official. So who knows? Unless you're a Chinese lawyer, a Hong Kong lawyer, that is beyond the scope of most of our ability to even dig into. But anyhow, that was the agreement, to have one country, two systems.
And with that kind of mushy talk from their lawyers, we're churning over the soil again with the intention of doing something drastically different than what people have assumed was solid ground between the system of Hong Kong and the system of mainland China.
I think China watchers in general would agree that what's happening now is no great surprise.
No, it's not.
The Chinese government party cannot broker the type of independent and pro-democracy demonstrations, the action on the internet that's going out from Hong Kong, and basically just anti-party rhetoric that's taking place. We saw some hints 2-3 years ago when some publishers were disappearing out of Hong Kong.
Yeah.
While they had a legal right in Hong Kong to publish the books they did, Beijing frowned on it and found it uncomforting. So these people disappeared. Shortly after that, we had the umbrella movement.
Mm-hmm.
Then that died down. I happened to be through Hong Kong when that was taking place.
And the umbrella movement had two components going on to it. The umbrellas were brought out for a specific purpose. One was to avoid the cameras, and the second was to defend themselves against the water cannons being used to disperse the crowds.
I think eventually the pepper spray, the water cannons, but it became more symbolic, I think, than anything actual. So anyhow, that died down, and then there was the most recent set of demonstrations in the last year, in which they were protesting some legislation which would give Beijing the right to deport citizens from Hong Kong for trial.
Right.
And bring them out of Hong Kong and then settle their jurisdiction issues inside Beijing. Well, they pulled that legislation off the table.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, the activity was more a pro-democracy, a much bigger picture.
Yeah.
It died down with the coronavirus, and then it was reactivated again with the new declarations that Beijing announced at their big meeting that's taking place at the moment. Essentially, it appears that Beijing is saying, we've had enough. This type of behavior, rhetoric, is a threat to our national security. We have to stop it. Now, as I said earlier, it's no surprise to any China watcher.
No.
Back during the previous demonstrations, China had a massive amount of military-like equipment in Shenzhen. So they've been primed and ready to go. There's no question that they can shut down these demonstrations. They absolutely can. While some may wish otherwise, China is quite capable of enforcing whatever they want to by might.
Yeah.
We may wonder about the time. That's significant, too. They say they're going to pass this legislation on the 28th. We know they have the machinery in place to move as fast as they want into Hong Kong. And what they're probably trying to avoid is the May 35th memorial.
The May 30 what again?
May 35th memorial.
What's the 35th?
If you do the math on it, that's June 4. Now, I say that somewhat tongue-in-cheek. Let's see if I can explain it. For years, the censors have prohibited any talk about June 4th, which is the anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre.
Correct.
You know, the people online are quite creative, and one rather humorous but fun way of dealing with was to talk about May 35th.
Mm-hmm.
So June 4th's coming up. They certainly don't want to have the candlelight vigil take place in Hong Kong this year, so it's convenient if they could pass the legislation, make it legal, at least in the eyes of Beijing, to move in and just shut down any further declarations and awkwardness. So I think that's part of the reason for the rush on it.
All right. So you expect them to move between the dates of the legislation being enacted and the May 35th, June 4th, it's going to be coming up next.
That would be my prediction. It would make sense if they're saying, we're going to do this anyhow, we've had enough, no more demonstrations. And they have a double opportunity in front of them as well. they can say it's not only a matter of national security. And one thing that's in the legislation is saying that all people in Hong Kong must give respect to the Chinese flag.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a symbolic manner. Can we expect them in the future to demand that those flags be placed in churches like they are in the mainland now? Can we expect them pictures of Xi Jinping to suddenly appear and be required to show one's patriotism, possibly?
Yeah, I do want to get to the long prognostications here for sure, because they have a longer impact.
Sure.
But I want to ask the question up front again. So what? China is aggressive. They want more territory. And Hong Kong has technically been part of China before. The British took it away. Of course, they want it back. Why should it matter to American Christians what's happening with Hong Kong?
Well, for years, Hong Kong has been the de facto port of entry for Christian ministry. Certainly not the only one, but without a question, the primary one. And I would say all the way back into the 1800s, Canton and then Hong Kong, as we refer to it, has been a place where Western missions can gather, can train, send people and pastors back into the country. And it's very definitely been used as a place, you know, many seminaries, training schools, and so on and so forth. My first briefing back in the 90s was by James Taylor down in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very common type of activity. So in that sense, it's going to curtail one more wonderful opportunity.
Doctor, let me ask the question about the difference then between Western perceptions of the church in Hong Kong and church in China. In practical terms, we shouldn't be surprised that the government's going to assume their preeminence over the territory. That's going to come. But is there any real difference then between the Church of China proper and the church that's known in Hong Kong? I would say that the traditions of the denominations involved are more Western-oriented because so many churches were planted there by American and British missionaries over the years. But is there any fundamental differences between the way that Christianity is expressed on mainland China versus Hong Kong?
There has been. There's been a much greater openness, and it's not just in the religious sphere. For example, if you go down to the Star Ferry, you'll see people openly handing out flyers about the Falun Gong. Economically, many businesses and business people have seen Hong Kong as a place where they can move money in and out of China and all of Asia. We can expect that to stop or at least slow down a little bit and be more highly regulated. It's interesting, in the last publication of policy for religious activity, which was adopted, I think it was 2017 or 18.
Yeah, we talked about that right after we returned from our last trip.
They did include, they would talk about policy and say this includes the SAR, Separate Administrative Regions of Macau and Hong Kong.
Right.
So that's already on the books, but it hasn't been enforced because they've been respecting the commitment to one country, two systems up till now.
Yeah.
Now, their spokespeople say that that will continue, but if you read the regulations, you can see that any negativity towards the party is stated to be a threat to national security.
Which is sedition.
Oh, that's very, very serious crime.
Right.
I'm probably overstepping a little bit in practice, but in essence, it's like treason. And in our country, we want threats to national security to be treated severely. They do, too. The difference is speaking out against our current president or the previous president isn't considered a threat to national security.
We'll be back with more insight from our own Dr. China right after this. Thank you, friends, for standing with Compassion Radio during these times of great change to our normal life. Of course, there's nothing normal about our situation, but there's also nothing normal about the kind of faith and power we find in Jesus. Compassion Radio will continue to keep bringing you encouragement from the Word, inspiring stories from the front lines of faith, and awesome opportunities to make a difference for the kingdom around the world. But we need your help right now to continue doing just that. Please take a moment today to consider how you might help us to accomplish our unique media ministry and mission. Here's how. Just visit our website, CompassionRadio.com, or call our toll-free order line, 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Reach out to us whatever way works for you. And now, back to our discussion.
Speaking out against our current president or the previous president isn't considered a threat to national security.
It is considered an essential component to a vibrant Republican democracy.
To our freedom, yeah. Sure. And they would remove that. They would also say, and we can talk about the practical aspects of where religion will move, but I think they'll have a double-pronged basis when this gets activated.
So let's talk about those prongs, Doctor. We have the immediacy of the event. We're going to try probably to pre-anticipate demonstrations that might show up on the 35th of May, which of course coincides with the Tiananmen Square massacre, which they still refuse to acknowledge ever happened. At that time, we have now an occupation, but of course they would see it as a police action with internal troops doing the things that countries always have done. You put down rebellions, you preserve the integrity of the Union, and that's what they will call it. They'll appeal to our American history in describing it. At the same time, they'll launch new initiatives. They will appeal to our own history, our own sense of history, to defend themselves, and then they'll begin something that's new that America probably has never done. So describe to me what the expectations are, what the image they're going to project, and then what they're actually going to do.
Well, you've already touched on it. Before we just radically disavow any credibility to anything that the Chinese leadership may say, it's crucial that we have a brief history lesson.
Yes. The history you're going to talk about is not just about who did what and when, but the effects of what lies and deception and deceit and undermining have done. Socially and economically, morally, the West does not have clean hands in the interactions with China over the past 200 or 300 years. And so China, the government that currently exists now, wants to take the moral high ground in their defense of their policies.
I think that's fairly said. Through Chinese eyes, if we look at it through their perspective, there's some justification. We go all the way back into 1839 through 42, what's commonly referred to as the first Opium War.
Mm-hmm.
Probably most who have had brief history lessons understand that, yes, the Europeans were first through India and then later through the major ports. One of the primary was Canton or Hong Kong. Westerners were bringing in opium to exchange it for valued goods.
Right.
Not only was it economically beneficial, drugs for pottery, drugs for precious minerals, drugs for food stuff, whatever, but you were addicting the Chinese people. Pretty soon, you know, somebody said in, I think it was Shandong province, they said, 10 out of every 8 people here are addicted to opium. Addiction is a horrible, horrible thing.
So we're looking at a perspective of history, which is true. The facts are there. So the inferences we draw from that are such. The Chinese government likens our early history in the West with China as being a drug cartel, co-opting the economy of China, getting their people hooked on the drugs so they're more dependent, therefore more demanding of the product, so that we can get more and more goods out of China at the lowest possible prices because they're desperate to get their drugs. That was open trade policy at the time, and it was glossed over and ignored by most internationalists at the time because Chinese lives were not worth anything according to the Western value set at the time. These are just historical facts, and I'm not saying that in order to condemn us, to make us feel guilty now. I'm simply saying that the Chinese, as you mentioned earlier, have justification for looking at the West as being duplicitous in their intentions when it comes to trade wars. And they also look at our drug problem now as being something in their minds of being good medicine. So they're happy to feed our drug habit now and be involved in the drug crisis, because they don't care. We did it to them, we might as well get our own medicine back at us. And there are plenty of people, I think, in the party that act and think that way because they would see it as tit for tat. Is that the way you've seen it and the way you've talked to officials in China over the past few years?
You know, it gets even more complicated because in the midst of all the discussion of the first and second Opium War, there was as much as 120 tons of opium being shipped in some years. So there's great magnitude.
Yes, sir.
A key in all of this and the treaties attached to them was Hong Kong. In the first treaty, which was the Treaty of Nanjing, Hong Kong was ceded to the Europeans as a port.
Yes.
And Americans are not exempt. In 1844, we signed the Treaty of Huangsha. Very similar, a few differences, but we were in that horrible time as well. In the Second Opium War, however, it was settled by the Treaty of Tianjin in 1860, key date. Mm-hmm. And Hong Kong was granted to the United Kingdom, not just to use the port to bring in drugs and abuse the people, but they owned it. And so from 1860 to 1997, China has waited patiently. And the lesson here is people who think that they're going to give up on Taiwan.
Mm.
They will not. And they say, we can wait a little longer, but we will get Taiwan back. And I believe that this is one of the reasons that they did not come down harder on Hong Kong earlier. The eyes of Taiwan are on them, and they're
right.
trying to woo the Taiwanese in and say, look, join our great and growing country, our prosperous country, our respected country worldwide. Join us, and we will respect your freedoms that you treasure. So one of the interesting things to watch now is what the response will be in Hong Kong and how it will impact the country of Taiwan to push it away or bring it to it. Now, they may not care. They're already running some naval ships into the port. And they've said, if we need to take Taiwan by military force, we will do that. They've never denied that that's out of their privy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's some of what's going on in Hong Kong. And it's a major chess game or mahjong game, and we'll see what happens.
I'm seeing what seems to be two alternative midterm narratives being developed here because of the economic crisis and the COVID crisis. Crisis never goes to waste in an Asian society. You find the inflection point and you make the most of your opportunities based on what your long-term goal set is whenever the circumstances allow. Right now, the world's attention is focused at their navels because they feel like it's all about us. America's no different. We want our economy reboot. We want all these things back. We want. So we don't pay attention to those who actually have an effect or play a part in how healthy our economy might be in the future. China is central to that because we made it that way. We invested in them heavily in the 70s and 80s, opened it up to Western-style economics, and they adopted that. They didn't adopt our values or our political systems, but they adopted the money. Right now, that economy is on the skids. This is the time for them to be able to tell the world one of two things. One, even when the Western powers have fallen because they couldn't control this virus, we could. We conquered it. And when the economy collapses, only a government as integrated as ours can solve the social order problem when the economy collapses. So even if our banks are hurting, even if our industries are sidelined, we will persevere, we will survive, and we will assert our authority to show that it's possible for a country to survive, even at our debt load. We are going to survive. Watch us. And the other side is they're playing the Taiwan angle. Watch how gentle we can be with our neighbors, even when they provoke us. Both those streams seem to be what the messaging is coming out of Beijing right now. We don't read the tea leaves very well in this country. We never have. What do you think is going to be the interim of this? Taiwan is being softened up with gentleness. Hong Kong is being crushed under the oppressive thumb of being right on the border and right there. They can roll right across anytime they want to. How do you think it's going to play in the midterm before this COVID and this economic crisis is over?
As you know, it's always very difficult to predict the future if you try to do it before it happens.
Yes, sir.
But let me go ahead. You mentioned there's a well-known Chinese character that the figures represent both crisis and opportunity.
Yeah.
It's nothing that we need to tell the party about. They know it well, and I think you've said wisely they're likely to use this period of time. I believe that on the political side, they will say, we are dealing not with people's voices who have different sentiment. We are dealing with the threat to national security, and that needs to be dealt with firmly. The same type of surveillance, monitoring, censorship that's experienced in the mainland will be in place in Hong Kong, I would guess, within 2 years. They will also be able to say it's not just a worldview threat to our unity and sovereignty, but it's also a health safety issue we need to check. It won't be as easy to get in and out of Hong Kong as it's been in the past.
Yeah.
It's been almost like for Americans going into Canada or another allied country. And I believe that's going to change. What that means, I don't know. I think there will be increased monitoring when in Hong Kong for all foreigners and probably all people.
Right.
So that's one thing.
We'll pick up a conversation on tomorrow's broadcast. I know that right now most of us are concerned, if not consumed, with worry about the desperation, fear, and violence pouring out in our own streets this week. We're concerned, too. We're praying for a just peace. It can happen, friends. And if you haven't considered it yet, I challenge you to join us in seeking God's heart for our country and all the people in it. May the Lord speak to you as you invite Him to share His heart with you. I have much more to say about that on our website today, so visit us at CompassionRadio.com to learn more. When you call or write us today with your tax-free gift, make sure to ask for Michael O'Brien's brand new music project, Crown Him, available on CD or for digital download. Our toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And you can find us 24/7 at our website, CompassionRadio.com.